listening to all these people talk about real estate and getting freedom and reading these books. And I just became addicted to reading from that point and listening to podcasts and just studying how to do this, how to not make mistakes, how to make it as low risk as possible, and just started absorbing as much information as I could.
Welcome to Passive Income Unlocked, where we unlock the doors to intelligent, hands-off real estate investing. We talk to experts in the space about what they do, how they do it, and most importantly, why they do it. My passion is careful, intelligent investing and closing the investing gap one investor at a time. While money doesn't buy happiness, passive income does have the potential to buy back your time. What would you choose to do with your time if you had enough passive income to live your best life? How would you like to spend your days? What kind of impact would you like to make? I'm here to tell you, dream big. There's no ceiling. It's all possible if you take consistent action towards your goals. It's been said that success is 80% mindset and 20% strategy. So we discuss both. Ready to gain knowledge and take action? Let's dive in. Hey, everyone, and welcome back to the show. Today, I'm super excited to announce our guest, David Oh. David, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, very excited to have your story shared with the audience and just so much richness in what you've got to share. So everyone, David is a former software engineer, got burned out climbing the corporate ladder, found passive income from real estate investing with no money down through the Burr method. So I'm very excited to talk to David about the Burr method, which is a classic way to get started in real estate, although we haven't touched on it yet. So in any case, David, why don't you take us back in time a bit and tell us a little bit about your background and what drew you into the real estate space?
Yeah, of course. So yeah, I grew up nothing special in a middle-class family. And I was raised and told what so many of us are today is that you need to go to college and get a job working for somebody else. So that's what I did. I got a bachelor's degree in computer science. Went on, got a great job working at a big company that had benefits, retirement plans, all that stuff that we think is so important. And spent about 12 years there and had 5 promotions and was thinking I was very successful what I was doing with my life. And you get a job, you start climbing the corporate ladder. But then you realize that really time is your most valuable asset, right? It doesn't matter how much you're getting paid. It really matters, like, how much time do you have for yourself and the things that you want to do, to spend time with your family, to do things that you're passionate about, something that I really overlooked. You know, my mom.
And how did you, real quick, David, how did you realize, like, was there a series of events or was it just that time was your most valuable asset?
Yeah. The one thing that I thought was kind of funny, but it always stuck with me was that, you know, it was like, I think it was my final promotion at my job that, yeah, I was just usually working 40 hours a week, right? That's what I got hired for, is to work 40 hours a week, you know, 8 to 5 with a lunch hour in there, Monday through Friday, right? And when I got my 5th promotion, they had given me a 5% raise, okay? So I got my 5% raise. And then that next week, my boss called me up and he says, hey, we gave you that big promotion. And people with your title are expected to put in 50 to 60 hours a week. So there it was. I was all mad getting off the phone with my boss because I had done the math in my head and that now I'm going to have to work an extra 10 to 20 hours a week, but I only got 5% raise. And I'm like, now I'm getting paid less. I got promoted. Now I'm getting paid less. And I was just so irritated with that. That was never even explained to me when I was getting the promotion that I'm expected to work more hours now. And I was always out of work at, you know, 40 hours hits, I'm done, right? I've got other things to do. I've got kids at home. I've got a family. And I was not passionate about it at all. Huge, huge corporation, kind of a toxic culture there. They're always laying people off. So you're always looking over your shoulder. And yeah, I was getting paid really well. It was 6 figures. You know, come in every 2 weeks, which gets you really comfortable. And that was kind of the trap that I was in, is I was so comfortable with this job and thinking that I was successful in the eyes of society and everything else, that every time I did get a raise, we started buying nicer things, right? We bought new vehicles. We bought a bigger house. We bought a lake house. We bought a boat. We bought a jet ski and all these awesome things that we're doing. But, you know, we're leveraging debt for that, right? We're using our credit card more. I still got student loans from going through, you know, 2 degrees in undergrad and graduate school. And so here's my pay going up. At the same time, all the debt payments on these new things, these new lifestyle upgrades are also right there with it. So by the end of my career in corporate, my paycheck would come in and it would be the very next day that literally all of it was spent on making payments. And so I would get these raises and then realize I was no closer than to retirement than when I first started my job there, because, you know, it was going to be a long time before I was going to pay off all this debt and, you know, be able to retire. And so that's when I kind of hit a wall. And I just remember being really, really frustrated, really unhappy with just everything in my life, feeling trapped, you know, in this job that I didn't want to be doing. And yeah, I remember my mom always saying growing up, like, if you do something that you love, it doesn't feel like it's a job anymore. And I knew I was so far away from loving my job and loving what I did, because there was just no greater purpose. There was no mission that we're going to go out there and do something great in the world. It just felt like, you know, working at a giant corporation that you were just kind of lost in the mix there. And, you know, we weren't making the world a better place. We were just trying to make revenues and increase profits for the shareholders, right? So a big disconnect there between, you know, trying to be passionate about something that,
yeah,
you know, you just never were going to be passionate about it. And so, yeah, I mean, that kind of triggered like, hey, I got to look for a way out of this, and
totally
started searching around. At the time, I was a big like fantasy football guy. Like, that was the only podcast I would listen to. It's the fantasy football one. Try to gamble on it. And they were always wrong. And I always lost money. And one day I was just sitting in my cubicle. I remember it still to this day. And, you know, here in St. Louis where I am, you know, in the wintertime, maybe around November, December, it starts getting dark before 5 o'clock. So I was sitting in my cubicle that day and it was already dark outside. And I realized that the entire daylight hours of my day has been spent in a cubicle at a job that I absolutely hated. I'd rather be anywhere else than in there. And so that's when I took out my phone and instead of looking for the fantasy football podcast, I said, maybe there is a podcast out there about getting financially free or using real estate. And of course there's, you know, thousands of them. And that's when I stumbled upon a podcast show like yours. And they just had guests on that were talking about their experience and everybody had the same story. It always started with, we're going to read Rich Dad, Poor Dad. So that was a book I went out and bought immediately on Amazon.
So true.
And I think I finished it within the first 2 days of getting it. It was just so eye-opening. It's like everything society doesn't tell you about money and working and all the stuff. And completely motivated me to start heading in that direction. And it was really cool.
That's awesome. Yeah. What a great story. I mean, I just love, I mean, obviously it was difficult to realize that you know, and I went through the same thing, put so much time and so much of my energy into something that just really wasn't feeding my soul at all. You know, a career working for an employer, and that, you know, the story about promotions, you actually get paid less sometimes when you get a promotion because you're expected to work more hours. I mean, in your case, you're expected to potentially work 50% more hours than you were working. I can imagine that was a very upsetting moment. So, well, that's awesome. Let's now like,
One more thing I would like to add to that is, you know, I was working at a big corporation that people have been there for like 20, 30, 40 years. And so we would have these retirement parties that come up all the time. Somebody's retiring with, you know, 35 years of service at the company. And at every one of these retirement parties, like I was seeing what was going to be, what my retirement party was going to look like, basically. It's like they're leaving the company after being there pretty much their entire lives. They don't know anything different. And all of them just kind of had this look and feeling that, you know, everything just whizzed by them and they're not financially where they, you know, ever wanted to be. They're not happy. They don't know what they're going to do next because they never had the freedom to explore different opportunities. They've always been stuck here working. And I just remember that like I'm not going there. I kind of see where this is going, and I don't want to be like them when I retire. Like, I want to be so excited about doing what I do every day because I love doing it. I don't want to be in that place where it all passes by and I could have had chances to find my purpose, find something that I was passionate about. And so that was kind of an important thing for me to see to, you know, get me going down this other path, which I've taken now.
Yeah, that's such a good point. I'm glad you brought that up about the, you know, these retirement parties that you were having at your company, because I mean, it's just when you, I kind of experienced a similar thing, not with retirement parties, but just seeing who was at the company that I was at. And it's like, is this the path that I want my life to go down? Are these the people that I'm modeling? And, you know, nothing against any particular individual, but it just wasn't what I wanted for my life. You know, I didn't really see that being the fullest and best use of my life. Like, so, I mean, I would encourage all the listeners to look around you and, you know, just to think like, and again, it's nothing against any particular individual, but are you in an environment that's conducive to actually helping you create and push towards, like, are you modeling the people that, are you on a path that's going to get you where you want to go based on who's around you?
Yeah.
So, okay, David, thanks so much for that really wonderful, just like, I mean, I think that story can just resonate with so many people. What did you do first? You know, when you, after you read Rich Dad, Poor Dad, what was your next move?
Yeah, well, I mean, that just opened my eyes to like the difference between an asset and a liability. And it's just like, I never thought for a second that the house that I lived in was a liability. But I mean, it is, because you don't get any cash flow on it. Every month you're making a mortgage payment. Every month you're paying the taxes, you're paying the utilities. And it's just all money out the door. And, you know, I always thought, oh, that was like my biggest asset, my, you know, my thing. And it's actually my biggest liability. And so once I kind of figured out, okay, if it's not paying me money, paying me income every single month, it's not healthy for me financially, I was able to start making some decisions. First of all, I stopped putting everything on credit, stopped buying everything on credit. And then you just, you know, try to work that, work your debt down. Dave Ramsey talks about something called the debt snowball that I immediately jumped on. So I started paying down all of these liabilities, right? Until I got to a point where I could eliminate a whole payment. I remember I bought a new truck in 2015. And I remember thinking how smoking of a deal it was because they got a 1.8% interest rate on it. I was like, this is like free money, right? But what it was it was a $500 payment every single month that I witnessed coming out of my bank account. And so that's a big chunk of cash every month to be shipping out. And once I realized that, I was like, don't get so excited about the interest rate. You know, get excited if you can eliminate that $500 payment. And so when I remember when I paid off the truck, I had like $6,000 or $7,000 left on it. And I was really contemplating, do I leave the loan in place because of the interest rate so low? It's kind of like free money. I kept lying to myself about that. But then the day I paid that off and I didn't see $500 coming out of my bank account, my bank account was $500 greater than it ever was every single month that I was making these payments. I mean, it felt like a huge weight was off my back because now I was closer to freedom. I didn't have that $500 payment that I need to make every month. So I could get a lower paying income source and be able to quit my current job. And so I started doing that with all of my liabilities. And that was really key to kind of getting me closer to freedom as fast as I could. I just continued to learn more. Like, I was never a reader after school. So I read some books during, you know, high school and graduate school and all that. But as soon as nobody was making me read, I didn't pick up a book again until listening to all these people talk about real estate and getting freedom and reading these books. And I just became addicted to reading from that point and listening to podcasts and just studying how to do this, how to not make mistakes, how to make it as low risk as possible. And just started absorbing as much information as I could.
For sure.
And then I went out and just started looking for my first property, which I've worked with hundreds of investors since, and that is always the hardest thing, is buying that first property that's going to start the snowball for you for generating passive income.
Yeah. Just want to touch on just one thing that you said before you continue with your awesome story. But so, I mean, I can completely relate to wanting to just remove all the extra payments, right? Because in the beginning, when you're trying to reach that point where you can actually let go of your job, it's so important to decrease your monthly expenses so that you can reach your, so that you have less of a need for, you know, that high paycheck that you're getting every 2 weeks. And I think that's a super critical point at that phase of the journey. And then also, of course, you know, a truck is not like an income producing asset. It's just a liability. Right. But at some point, you know, along your journey, as I'm sure you'll get to at some point, you know, when you start buying things, you start buying income producing assets, and the leverage is more acceptable at that point because you, it's actually adding to your, you know, monthly income rather than taking away from it. So leverage isn't necessarily always bad. It's just important to understand how it's affecting your current lifestyle and what you're actually paying down with that money. So, okay. Yeah. So you, and I love that you're reading all the time. I mean, it's just, once you get that bug and you realize I have to do this, then absorbing information constantly is so, I mean, it's so important. Like I went through it. I don't have to do it now to the extent that I was doing it in the beginning, but when you first decide you're going to do it, just like immersing yourself in all of the amazing content that's out there for free or for not that much with books is such a good way to actually just get yourself moving. So such a great point. So, okay. So you were telling us about your first deal and how that is really hard. It's a hard hurdle for a lot of people. So tell us more about that.
This show is sponsored by Lux Capital Investment Group. Lux Capital provides pre-vetted, highly favorable investment opportunities on a risk-adjusted basis. Our opportunities are diversified across asset classes, geographies, and operators. We are nothing short of rigorous in our approach to evaluating investments. We focus on downside protection, conservative underwriting, recession-resistant asset classes, and forging strong relationships with operating partners and investors. If you want to be an intelligent, hands-off investor and gain access to the types of deals that I like to invest in personally, make sure to go to lux-cap.com, L-U-X-E-cap.com, and sign up for our newsletter.
Yes, it's really scary to pull off that first deal. It's definitely the hardest deal that anybody ever does, is their first one. So for me, I kind of got, you know, I knew enough to be dangerous at this point. I spent better part of a year just listening to how to do this and how other investors would pull it off and everything like that. And the problem is it's a whole nother learning experience when you actually do it. That's when you actually learn the fastest and the most, because you've got real dollars, real time on the line. And you know, started looking for that first property, finally pulled the trigger, I think about 10, 11 months into this whole journey. And that property was an absolute nightmare because I made every single mistake in the book. It was really, really stressful time for my family. It took about 6 months to get out of this thing once I bought it. It's supposed to be a long-term, you know, buy and hold rental. This was like a property that I bought for like $40,000. It needed maybe $20,000-$25,000, according to the wholesaler that I bought it from. And then I put, you know, a little bit on top of that. So maybe $25,000-$30,000 to be safe. And the property is supposed to be worth $100,000 when we're all done. So it'd be work out perfectly under the Burr method, which you'll hear us talk about. It's buy a property, rehab a property, rent that property, and then refinance that property, get all your money back that you put into it, and then go do it again and repeat it. So the reason I was attracted to that strategy is because it's a way to invest in real estate, rental real estate specifically, where you don't have to come up with a 20% down payment every time, which was critical to me because I didn't, you know, everybody always thinks that you need all this cash to start investing in real estate. It's just not true. If you can buy something that needs a little work done to it, you can fix it up and add that value to where a bank can then refinance you. In this case, a $100,000 property, if it appraises for that, they'll give me $75,000 back. And so when I get that $75,000 back, now I've repaid my down payment that I used. I've repaid my construction costs that I used. And I can take it and go do another one and another one and another one and rinse and repeat and build up this nice portfolio that's going to allow me to retire. And so that's what blew me away when I started looking into this, that I could do that with no money. And of course, you've got to figure all these other parts out. You got to figure out how to rehab a house, how to find a contractor that will do that for you. And in this case, I bought the house as is, which means there's no guarantees that everything's going to work or The seller's not going to fix anything for me. And pretty much everything was wrong with it. I had the house inspected, smart of me, but the problem was that none of the utilities were on when I bought it. So this was a vacant house that had been vacant for years and years and years. So my inspector couldn't test the plumbing. My inspector couldn't test the electric, the sewer, nothing. So everything we got in there and, you know, all this stuff was completely shot. So my $25,000, $30,000 rehab budget actually got jacked up to like $55,000 or $60,000. And that completely took me out of the deal. Mm-hmm. My wife and I had both had corporate jobs. We had been saving up in our savings account for 10 years. And literally every dollar that was in our savings account was stuck in this house. It got to the point like 6 months in that if something else is going to go wrong, we didn't know how we're going to pay for it. And, you know, of course, my wife was even more nervous about this whole venture than I was, because I had been researching and researching and researching, thought I knew enough to pull all this stuff off. And so it was a really scary time for us and kind of strapped for money and basically it didn't cash flow anymore when we put that much into fixing it up. So I just ended up listing it and trying to get it sold. And so it took about 60 days to do that. Mm-hmm. But finally it sold at kind of a discount, like $93,000 or something like that, which I was happy because that allowed me to get most of my money back into my savings account and let us feel comfortable there. But yeah, that was the first deal. And I took a lot of learning lessons out of it and kind of knew,
yeah,
I felt like I kind of knew everything that could go wrong at that point. So like looking back at it, to lose $7,000 or $8,000 kind of paid for my education and rehabbing a house.
Yeah. And I mean, just to touch on something really important with your story is that, you know, that someone who went through that may have seen that as a huge setback and just said, you know, I don't want to do this. But clearly you decided, you know, I'm going to keep going. I'm not going to let the fear and the nervousness get in the way because I know that this can work. So how did you overcome that in the moment?
Yeah, that's a good question. I listened to a podcast and one of the guests said that there's going to be fear there no matter what, when you're doing this first one, the key is to leverage the fear. And so in my case, I was either going to be afraid of losing money on this deal that I'm doing, or I could be more afraid of going down that path, right? Staying in my job, never trying to get out, never trying to do this first one. And I was actually more afraid that I was going to be stuck in the corporate job when I'm 65 and be miserable and regret the decision to never get out of it and stay there. And so that's what I ended up being more afraid of. So I committed myself that I'm going to keep going. I'm going to do another one and another one, another one. And if I lose money, that's fine. I'm more scared of not making money and not getting out of this, you know, prison I was in the corporate, you know, cubicle.
Yeah.
So I just kind of leveraged that the other way. And that was really huge because I never even thought about quitting after this, you know, terrible property that I purchased and lost thousands of dollars on.
For sure. I mean, I think that's such an important point that resonates with me too. I mean, I remember at one point thinking about a decision I had to make. Was I going to, you know, start down the entrepreneurial path, which was going to, you know, I had chosen a program that I wanted to participate in to surround me with other entrepreneurs. And I was like, okay, is it worth losing this money, or what's worst case, like losing this few thousand dollars? Or I wasn't working at the time, I was traveling, and or working at, you know, going back to my career and staying there for another 25 or 30 years or whatever, like, and, you know, losing a few thousand dollars because it didn't work out was like such a better option, you know, than, because I could always go back to the job, right? You can always go back to your job,
right?
You know, in most circumstances, companies need employees.
Yeah. Jobs are always going to be there. Would you rather lose a couple thousand dollars or would you rather lose the next 25 years of your life?
And it's exactly
real easy.
Good way of putting it.
Keep going on.
So, okay. So yeah, so that was a great, so I think that's, so you overcame your fear. You decided you were going to keep doing one after another. And I know at some point it became easier. It became easy. So just keep telling us the story.
Yeah. And during that time, I remember telling my wife when she was, you know, kind of freaking out about, should we keep going or not? And I said, I'm committed to this thing like so much that if I end up losing our house that we're living in and we have nowhere to live, that I'm going to be on the side of the road with a cardboard sign is going to say, I buy houses, because I'm going to figure out how to buy the houses that are good deals. And no matter what, and we're not giving up, we're going to make it and keep going. And so the first one, knock on wood, is the only one that I've ever lost money on. And the next one just kind of, the second one that I got was just the easiest deal I think I've ever found in my life. It was just this, it was this foreclosure on the MLS where the lender, I think it was like Freddie Mac or something, they had tried to fix it up and sell it at like ARV. But of course, their finishes weren't really that great. And so it was just sitting on the market for a couple of months. And it was in like perfect rental condition. So I bought it. And I think we literally maybe put paint and carpet in there. We spent under $5,000. And we bought it for like $65, put in $5, and it was worth $100. And it was like such an easy deal. Refinanced it, got $75 back out. And yeah, it just kind of kept going and they got a lot easier.
So were you buying them with mortgages then or hard money or?
Yeah, kind of a combination. So I had gotten a HELOC on my primary house. So I had some equity there. And then I had found a commercial lender who I still use today. He would give me 80% of the purchase price and 100% of the rehab costs at like an interest only payment. So it was really affordable. And so I would use the 20% down payment that I need to buy with the commercial lender from my HELOC on my house. And so essentially, I wasn't using any of my own personal cash at this time. I had joined a mastermind, I got a coach, and he had told me that, hey, don't tap out your family savings cash on real estate. That's not a good idea. Instead, have that sitting there for an emergency. And so that's what I've employed ever since then is, I don't use cash on my deals. My cash is always sitting there in case there's an emergency where I need to get to it. And then I use other people's money. So today I do a lot of private money. So these are people that I know, like, and trust, family, friends, ex-coworkers, people like that, who have literally got cash just sitting in a savings account, earning, you know, 0.25 interest on their checking accounts and savings accounts. And I show them a way how we can give them 10 times that, right? We can literally get, you know, 4% interest rate, and they're so excited to get that because it's like 16 times what they're making in their bank account. And we can get a really good rate, like 4 or 5% from them. And so we do that. And then we still use the commercial lenders because they're really easy to work with, and you can give out solid loans as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Awesome. Yeah. And just to circle back to something you mentioned earlier, which was like, you know, the sort of difference in approach between you and your wife, you know, because you've been immersing yourself in this world with books and meeting people, networking, joining groups, et cetera. And when your partner isn't super as well versed in it or as committed to it, I think it's just so, I mean, how did you get her on board? You know, because I think that's an important lesson that a lot of people could learn from.
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of a slow process. Like, as I was diving into all this stuff, you know, a lot of it was just in the car driving home from work and listening to the podcast, listening to the book. So I got an Audible subscription. So I listened to probably 2 or 3 books a month. And I'd always come home and I would just like barf up to my wife, like what I learned. Oh, this, I could do this and this and this and this. And then, you know, after so many months of this, she's just like, well, when are you finally going to do it? It's like, I'm sick of hearing about it. Let's do it. And so that's what I remember hearing from her right before I bought the first property. And then, of course, you know, we had a terrible experience, but it was almost reinforcing to her that, like, I was going to figure it out. And so she had the confidence that I wasn't giving up. I was doing this no matter what for our family. Mm-hmm. And now she, you know, she's completely come around. She works, we're partners in our business. She's part of women's real estate networking group. She listens to a lot of podcasts too. So it's just kind of worked out wonderfully.
That's awesome. So, okay, well, that's great to hear. I think that's like just an important, you know, point that everyone just needs to consider their partner, right? Because they're like one of the biggest, I mean, you know, you need to be aligned, right? If you're going to go far in this business. Yeah. So,
right.
Okay. So your second deal was great. And how many did you, like, were you shooting for a specific cash flow number when you were looking at these properties?
Yeah. I mean, I always recommend to our clients that you analyze like 100 deals before you even buy something. And what that does is it gives you really good clarity in what is a good deal in your market and what isn't. And so in my market, a typical good deal is going to cash flow me $300 a month after all of your expenses. So we're talking, you know, your mortgage payment, your taxes, your insurance, your vacancy, your maintenance, all that stuff.
And do you look at that after the refi or before the refi?
I'm looking after the refi. So after you rehab it, after you get it reappraised and they give you 75% back on the appraised value, what that mortgage payment's going to look like, what your rental income is going to look like, and all your expenses. And then I should have $300 on top of that. And so essentially, if you kind of look at this from a high level, since you're doing the BRRRR method, you've got no cash left in the property. And so you're basically getting an infinite return at that point. So you haven't put any money that's being left in there, but you're getting $300 a month income. I mean, it's crazy, but that's how people get rich and wealthy, is because they invested in something that has an infinite return, which you can't do in the stock market. You can't do really any other type of investment, right? Nobody's going to give you a loan to buy a stock. But of course, banks will give you loans all day long on real rental property. And so, yeah, so at $300 a month doesn't sound like a lot of money. But once you start adding a property and adding another property, eventually you get up to like 10 properties, which is at that point, I had $3,000 a month coming in passive income that I didn't have to have any cash to start creating that business. And so at that point, I had $3,000 a month. What a lot of people don't realize is with rental real estate, it's essentially tax-free. So if I've got, you know, in my case, my ideal property was a $100,000 property. So that gets depreciated on your tax returns over 27 and a half years. I think if you do the math, it comes out to be right around, let's see. So for example, $3,000 a month times 12 months is what, $36,000 a year. Well, basically that $100,000 property is going to be depreciated about $36,000 a year every year. So essentially your rental income that you're making is completely tax-free. And so when you factor that in, you know, $36,000 a year doesn't sound like a whole lot of money, but when it's tax-free, it's now almost equal to like a $60,000 or $70,000 salary from an employer. And so once I got to that point, I could say, okay, I can pay for my house now. I can pay for my groceries with that. We can live completely off of my corporate salary without having my corporate salary anymore. And that's when I ended up quitting my day job to do this full time.
That's awesome. So 10 houses in, you were able to leave your corporate job. Well, congratulations. You know, that's something that a lot of people are working towards. And yeah, congrats on that.
Thank you.
So, okay, David, we don't have too much time left, but tell us a little bit about, you know, where you've taken it since you've gone full time.
Yeah. So I had always had my real estate license, but in fact, I had never thought about investing in real estate. I got my license in 2013, just kind of on the side to have some extra income coming in, just selling, you know, houses that people live in to my friends and family. Back when I bought my first house, my agent was terrible. And so I kind of had to learn everything as we were going through the transaction myself to make sure she wasn't messing it up. And so that's when I just went out and got my license and started practicing part-time. And then kind of fast forward, I had done this for myself, and people started asking questions like, hey, can you help me do this? And I kind of found my new career in being an advisor to other investors. And so that's what we do today at Wealth Agents, is we're basically your real estate investment advisor. So people sign up with us on wealthagents.com, mm-hmm. and they get assigned an advisor like me or somebody on my team. And we kind of map out the game plan, like, where do you want to get to? And you know, a lot of people like me, I want to get to 10 properties so I can retire. Well, we've got a game plan for how you achieve that. And we start showing you properties and analyzing deals with you and negotiating the prices, the inspections, all that stuff to start building your portfolio. So that's what we do today full time.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, I mean, it's such an important point, because to really accelerate that timeline from where you're able to actually leave your job, the BRRRR method is such an amazing tool, right? Because like you said, you're getting infinite returns if you do it correctly. And you can buy one house and then use that cash. And of course, you have a full-time job still, right? Which allows you to get mortgages more easily. I mean, a question that comes into my mind is how, you know, I don't think that method is like so viable where I live. You live in St. Louis, and I know you study the market very closely. So where would you recommend? I mean, obviously this is a long question, but just give an idea of what you would recommend to people as far as where to look for these types of houses.
Yeah, it's got to be in an affordable market, right? So, I mean, the typical deal for us is like $100,000 house. So there's not too many places on the coast where you can find a house for $100,000. But yeah. They're out there, and there's a lot. I love the Midwest. Tons of places in the Midwest could do this. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that's where, you know, having a local agent there is a huge deal if you're not in one of these markets, because they're going to be your boots and eyes on the ground and connect you with the local network there, the contractors, the lenders, you know, everybody, the property managers, everybody that you need to operate your rental business out of state in most cases. So yeah, I would look for, you know, Midwest markets. If you are familiar with, if you have like back ties or history to a certain market, that's also a great place to look. I always recommend people, you know, backtrack where they've been, what markets they know and have been in, lived in or stayed in with family or stuff like that. Those are great places to start looking at.
Yeah, for sure. Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Dave, for coming on. And everyone, I hope you take some time to, you know, check out David's work and what he's doing and how he's helping people actually use the BRRRR method to leave their corporate jobs, because that's a pretty awesome service that you're offering, David. Thank you so much for coming on and sharing so much valuable information. I can't wait to share the story with our listeners and hopefully have you on again sometime in the future.
Awesome. Thanks for having me. It's been a blast.
Thanks, David. Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to Passive Income Unlocked. Before you go on to continue with your amazing day, please take a moment to reflect on what you truly desire in life. Then think about one thing you can do to push the ball forward in that direction. Also, please head over to iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts and leave an honest rating and review of this show. It really would mean so much to me. Passive Income Unlocked is brought to you by Lux Capital. Lux works with investors nationwide to invest in real estate. We are closing the investing gap one investor at a time. Connect online at www.lux-cap.com, LUXE-CAP.com, for tons of free educational content to further your success.